You are listening to a recording of the Open Society Foundations, working to build vibrant and tolerant democracies worldwide. Visit us at soros.org.
My name is Goran Buldiuski, director of the Think Tank Fund, one of the programs of OSI, Open Society Institute, or Open Society Foundations, that co-organizes this event. And next to me is Janet Heaven, associate director of the Information Program, the other co-organizer. Okay, then I suggest that we start with the program, and we introduce our goals and the reason why we brought you here from the side of the two programs, and then we have a number of speakers today and workshops that makes us excited, and we hope will make you excited as well about this work. So, Janet.
Hi, I'm Janet Haven. I'm from the Open Society Foundation's Information Program. The Information Program is a program that possibly many of you have not come across before. Very briefly, what we do is we look at the question of access to and use of information generally through the lens of new technologies. That has obviously informed a lot of what is going to happen over the next couple of days. We look at that question both from the issue from the policy side and from the hands-on technology side. I oversee initiatives within the information program that are more involved with the hands-on use of technology by civil society organizations. Most of my focus in the past has been working with advocacy organizations. So the coming together with the Think Tank Fund has been a new experience for us and has been very interesting. We have two initiatives that we work on that look at data specifically. One of them is overseen by my colleague back there, Elizabeth Egan, who oversees the Human Rights Data Initiative, which is a joint program between the Information Program and the Human Rights and Governance Grants Program at OSI. And I oversee the Transparency and New Technologies program, where we look at how new technologies are impacting transparency, accountability, and citizen participation. Generally speaking, what we're really interested in when we talk about the use of data is less the sort of bells and whistles that are kind of more obvious and exciting, which is, you know, data visualization and mapping and so forth. These we see as important as a means to an end, but what we're really interested in looking at and what we're hoping to really get at over these next couple of days is the question of how the use of data really impacts policy work, how it really changes policy outcomes, and how advocacy organizations or think tanks, in some cases, may operate differently or operate in new ways because of the increasing availability of data and the tools to analyze it out in the open.
Thank you, Janet. I think for most of you it will be a unique opportunity also to learn more about the information program. And in these 2 days, during the coffee breaks and lunch and dinners that we organize, make sure that you talk either to Elizabeth and Janet and learn more about their work. Once again, my name is Goran Buldiuski, work for the Think Tank Fund. I believe for most of you that's probably more familiar program within the large family of Open Society foundations. We support think tanks in what we call the traditional region, meaning Central and Eastern Europe and selected countries of former Soviet Union. We have two different program lines, one provision of core and institutional funds in the countries outside of the European Union, and then a specific project funding on basically counteracting populism and threats to open society in the EU member states that joined after 2004. As you can witness from this event, also we engage into activities which we consider to be more on the cutting edge of this work, meaning that we look at the communication of the policy research that organizations like yours do, and as well we look at, in a way, diversification of the ways how you reach various stakeholders in the policy process. When we speaking about this event, in a way we have three goals. One is to raise the awareness about the trends and as well the tools that are out there, and we notice that the think tanks are not very keen or they're at the beginning of using them. And we simply want to show what are the things available, not only in our region but broadly in the world, and that's why we brought some of the most notable organizations to present their work. We think that organizations that are operating in the region, the think tanks in the region, sit on far too much data and have too much access to a lot of data which is not out there and which could be used in many more ways than it's currently used. Second goal is we would like in these 2 days to initiate a process of reflection, meaning that we would like you to think about the contents that you hear from the resource people and from the panelists, but as well reflect about your own current practices and think of what you can change or what you can improve, because in a way this work could come in addition or complementary and improving the efforts that you already do for doing a better communication and advocacy. And eventually we would like to see concrete ideas. Probably tomorrow we will speak more about that. We would like you to leave this seminar with at least one or two ideas where you can think, okay, I go home and I think this is doable. I think I can convince my director, even if this is a rocket science to him or her. I will make sure that I try, if nothing else, at least for the curiosity of it. So these are the three goals that drives us, and this is a process in which we engaged together with the information program from last year. We already had five pilot projects where we supported several think tanks in doing work which is in the realm of these activities, and as well we are committed to continue the process. We were very pleasantly surprised about the interest that this topic raised. So apparently it's sexy, at least in this field. We had more than 150 applications, 81 organizations applied, and admittedly that even was beyond our expectations, which is a good sign. That means that there are people out there that are interested, and in a way I would say puts even additional responsibility on you in the room to take the action forward. You will have a lot to hear from us. We mentioned Elizabeth over there. She's on behalf of the information program. You saw Andre there in the corner, which is the fourth member of the organizational team, and he works for the Think Tank Fund. And Zofia, with whom you all have exchanged minimum 2 to 5 emails. So I think that's probably the average being 5 rather than 2. That is another colleague from from the TTF, and will help us through the program. I would like to pass this microphone now to all of you to say basically 3 things in 5 words. To say your name, your organization, and the country where you come from, and 3 key words about yourself. I can talk a lot, but in 3 words I could say I'm a donor and policy researcher. So what I would like to ask you is to do the same. So, or the topic here, but I'm afraid that I won't be able to do it in 3 keywords. If you are, please go ahead. So I will pass the microphone. So your name, the organization where you come from, the country, and keywords about yourself or in relation to the topic. Okay? Let's make it brief.
I was hoping you will start from the other end. My name is Asen Genov, and I'm coming from Bulgaria. I'm representing the 14th of January Foundation based in Sofia, Bulgaria. I'm a political blogger, let's say, and a digital rights activist in Bulgaria.
Good morning. My name is Adrian Moraru. I'm coming from a think tank in Romania, Institute for Public Policy. And I'm an activist, I'm a data junkie, and I'm a political commentator.
Magin Lesinski, I'm also coming from a Bulgaria Open Society Institute with a big project called European Policies Initiative. That is the focus on comparative studies of the new member states of the European Union.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Matej Kurian from Slovakia. I work for Transparency International, and I coordinate digital projects or IT-related projects. And I'm also a researcher, as everyone is here, I guess.
Hello, everyone. I'm Eva Vozárová from the Fair Play Alliance in Slovakia. I work as a lead for the technical project, and we have a big database project working with public data.
Thanks. Good morning, everyone. My name's Helen Derbyshire from Access Info Europe, and we work to defend your right of access to information. Thanks.
Christian Risteski from the Center for Economic Analysis from Macedonia, and I work as a researcher. We had one project with existing data about the municipalities in Macedonia, and we will update it right now. We are working on that.
Hi, I'm Jana Korunovska. I'm also from Macedonia. I work for Reactor, not a nuclear one. It's short for Research in Action. I'm a research design, and our fields are women, urban issues, and youth.
Hello, everyone. I'm Laura Bohantsova from Moldova. I'm PR officer to Talkative and Spontaneous, and at the same time, a website content manager of our website and three other websites. And I go crazy because it's three different design systems.
Hello, I'm Eneli Mikko. I'm from Estonia. I represent Praxis. It's the Center for Policy Studies. And I'm the communication manager and also the project manager for new communication projects.
Hello, everybody. I am Tanya Pavlov from Group 484, NGO engaged in the field of migration and from Serbia. And I'm program director and also research in the field of migration. And I hope that this training will help me to influence, to develop better brain gain policies.
Hello, my name is Yeton Mehmetia. I come from Kosovo. I represent GAP Institute. My position is as a policy analyst at GAP Institute in Pristina.
Hi, I'm Susan Treadwell from the Open Society Human Rights and Governance Grants Program. Three words, donor, researcher, political junkie.
Hi. My name is Orbit Goroni. I come from Kosovo Stability Initiative. And for people that are not really familiar with ICSOR, Kosovo Stability Initiative, it's a Pristina-based think tank, Kosovo think tank, focused on empirical research and analysis on socioeconomic field. And for myself, we put a lot of emphasis in advocacy phase after the in our post-production. So I hope to learn more for that kind of advocacy and networking with relevant stakeholders. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Daniela Mineva. I'm from Bulgaria. I work at the Center for the Study of Democracy, which is an NGO. And our main topics of research are anti-corruption, hidden economy, and civil society capture.
Good morning to everybody. My name is Emsa Dizdarević, Center for Security Studies from Sarajevo, Bosnia and Herzegovina. What I work officially, researcher, unofficially, I work everything. That's it.
Hello, I'm Petra Burai. I'm from Hungary and legal director of Transparency International Hungary, but also responsible for several research projects.
Hi, everyone. My name is Friedrich Lindenberg. I'm with the Open Knowledge Foundation. And I'm interested here in spending and budgetary data and how to understand it.
Hi, my name is Martin Tiesner. I work for the Transparency and Accountability Initiative, which is a collaborative of funders. My three words, scale, impact, and advocacy.
Hello, my name is Linda Ostera. I come from Providus, which is a think tank in Latvia, in Riga. In three words, I'm a policy researcher, but often these days, I wish I hadn't studied law, but I had studied something with IT and technologies. Seems to be far more useful.
Good morning. My name is John Wunderlich. I'm policy director at the Sunlight Foundation in Washington, D.C., and I would go with transparency, policy, advocacy.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Ellen Miller, co-founder and executive director of the Sunlight Foundation, based in Washington, D.C. And my three words would be, let's see, they're slightly different than John's, technology, transparency, data.
Hi, I'm Jonathan Gray at the Open Knowledge Foundation, and my three words would probably be open data and ecosystem.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Anila Ijika. I'm from Coplan Institute for Habitat Development, Albania. My three words, okay, in 15 years, we have worked very much in know-how. During the last 3 years, we are trying to work very much on policy and advocacy.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Marko Sosic. I come from Institut Alternativa. It's a Montenegrin think tank. I like to call myself a researcher, and I'm quite curious about this topic.
Hello, everyone. I'm Ellen Riotta from OSI Brussels, since a couple of weeks working on xenophobia. And I'm here because my previous job, I did part of what we are speaking about today, advocacy and communications for the European Council on Foreign Relations in Paris.
Hello, Jacek Kucharczyk from Warsaw. I'm the president of Institute of Public Affairs, which is a think tank over there. I'm also a member of the subboard of Think Tank Fund, and I'm a sociologist, political analyst, and political commentator.
Hello, everyone. I'm Jakub Eberlev from the Association for International Affairs from Prague. We're a foreign policy think tank, and I'm interested in opening the debate. That's the three words. On foreign policy in Czech Republic. That's more, sorry.
Hello, everybody. My name is Gubat Bayramov. I come from Azerbaijan. I'm representative economic research center. I am policy researcher. I am economist. As you probably know, economists and computer always use data. I like data. I like technology and advocacy.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. My name is Gia Jandir. I'm from Georgia. I represent New Economic School, which is a 10-year old think tank. So we work in different directions, but one of them is how to oblige our government to be limited. So my three words are limited government advocacy. But I need to add that I'm the board member of the Georgian Statistics, so if anybody there's something about, I'm ready to cooperate. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Nina Iskandarian. As you probably guessed, I'm from Armenia because that's how we always sit, Azerbaijan, Georgia, Armenia. And we didn't do that on purpose. I have witnesses. I come from the Caucasus Institute. I design and manage research projects.
Good morning. I am Masha Georgievich, program manager with the local government initiative of the Open Society Foundations here in Budapest. Three words, a donor, political scientist, and somebody working very much in public participation in policymaking. Thank you.
Hello, my name is Irina Solonenko. I come from Ukraine, and we need a Moldovan and Belarusian to supplement the Eastern Partnership team here. I represent the Open Society Foundation Ukraine, International Renaissance Foundation. I'm in charge of the European program. We have mostly served as a donor, but recently we have launched a few of our own projects. So the three words would be European integration, donor, and policy analyst.
Hello, everybody. My name is Yevhen Shulha. I'm from Ukraine as well. I represent Razumkov Center, which is a think tank, but besides, we have a huge sociological service, and we're sitting on a big database of sociological research pools, which we would like to somehow represent in the best possible way, so I'm here to learn how to do it.
Thank you. Hello, everybody. My name is Petr Ganev. I'm from the Institute for Market Economics in Bulgaria. I'm an economist, also coordinating projects. So,
hi, everybody. I'm Goran Tirak from Bosnia. I'm here on behalf of a Sarajevo-based think tank called Populari. I'm a policy researcher and analyst and web developer and designer and a psychologist.
Hi, I'm Ana Maria from the organization Echivis in Romania. And the three words would be innovative, participation, and youth.
Hello, everybody, or I guess I should say Sia, which is the extent of my Hungarian at this point. But my name is Tim McNaught, and I'm representing the Center for Economic and Social Development in Baku, Azerbaijan. Three words, research and social media.
Good morning, everyone. My name is Eric Barrett. I am from Tbilisi, Georgia. I represent OMC Jumpstart, or formerly known as Open Maps Caucasus. And my three phrases would be development, open data activism, and participatory democracy.
Good morning, everyone. I'm Biljana from Macedonia, from Studiorum. I work there as a program director and researcher in the human rights program. We do research in public health, human rights, and new media. My three words would be research, policy, and human rights.
Hi, I'm Tony Bowden from My Society in the UK, although I'm based in Estonia. I'm an agitator, boot rocker, and contrarian.
I don't know how to follow that. I'm Tom, Tom Longley from Tactical Technology Collective. I'm the program lead. My three phrases would be data, don't be scared, please keep it interesting, and no more 60-page reports.
I'm Elizabeth Egan from Open Society Foundations, and I'm going to hyphenate my words. Data depth, data silos not needed, and challenging commonly accepted facts.
Right, Marek Tuszyński, Tactical Technology Collective, evidence-based advocacy.
Good morning, I'm Alfredo Azula with the Policy Association for Open Society, Passos in Prague. I'm communications manager, messaging, content, multimedia.
Hi, my name is Julia Kasheru, and I'm from here, Budapest, Hungary, and I work for K-Monitor, which is a Hungarian NGO for public funds. And as I work for other organizations as well, I would, in three words, I would call myself a human rights activist.
Hello, everyone. I'm Tarek Jusic from Sarajevo-based Analytica Center for Social Research. Just briefly, currently we're working on a web-based platform trying to grant access to local government data in Bosnia. So that's why I'm here, to learn something and improve this thing we're trying to develop.
Good morning. My name is Jan Bartos. I came from Slovakia, from Bratislava, and I'm from Institute for Public Affairs, and I'm support manager.
Thank you. We will have more time and chance to basically learn about each other's organization and each other's work, because this afternoon, immediately after lunch, we are going to have our organizational market. We ask you to bring materials, presentations, and everything that will help you to present your organization, so you will have a chance to learn more about each other's work. As you've noticed, it's a quite diverse group, both in terms of subjects that you cover analytically, but also in type of organizations. While predominantly there are a lot of think tanks, also there are two other groups of people here around the room. One is our colleagues from different OSI PARs that were interested in the subject. And for those of you who are looking to learn more about the different programs of OSI, this is a good opportunity to get in touch with them. Also during coffee breaks and lunch breaks. And then Also, there is a number of organizations that could be labeled as accountability organizations that actually have been doing this this work. For example, we invited Fair Play Alliance and TI Slovakia that have been doing a lot in the past years. We thought that it's also useful to share some practices that already exist in the region and as well to have several resources. In addition to that, there are a number of other accountability organizations that are interested in this work, but also we see them as a potential resource to link with the think tanks and do projects of this type type together. Okay, I think we're at the beginning of this work. I want you got a relatively detailed program. We tried to provide as much as information in the agenda. I hope you got it. If you didn't, together with this badge that was put outside, also there is a small folder when there is a program where it should help you to navigate. In terms of substance and the organization of the program, we organize this in 2 days. The first day, especially the morning, will be more of laying out the field, providing the foundations on the issues around data, access to data, and how people like you can use it, and what are the standards out there, and as well what we could do more. In this respect in our region. Then in the afternoon we have a number of different issues that where we would like to raise your attention and as well to discuss them and learn about those. And tomorrow we will go more into in-depth exploration. So if I try to use a silly analysis, today is a sort of a supermarket where you could just walk around the aisles and you listen and you absorb the different ideas and you learn. And tomorrow will be a chance to go more deeper and explore some of the issues in depth and as well start thinking about concrete ideas and projects that you would hopefully do back in your organizations. Without further ado, I think we are good in compensating the loss of time with the beginning. I would like to pass the floor to Ellen Miller, who is the co-founder and the executive director of Sunlight Foundation, one of the preeminent organizations worldwide in this area of work, who kindly accepted our offer and came here to present their work, but as well to throw different ideas at you and in a way kick off this seminar. Thanks, Alan.
First of all, I want to say I'm just hugely impressed by the range and breadth and depth of the work that all of you represent. It's really quite remarkable and so exciting. And there's no question that John and I here from the Sunlight Foundation will learn as much as we contribute. So thank you all for coming and for all your hard work. I'm absolutely delighted to be with you today. Janet and I have known, wherever Janet has disappeared to, there she is. Janet and I have known each other for a long time, and she's always had this sort of teasing request, why don't you come to Central Europe sometime? So this time she asked me, all right, I can't refuse, because I've heard about all of your work for so long that it's very exciting. I want to start by telling you very briefly a little bit about the Sunlight Foundation, and then talk about ways that the data that we are involved with either producing ourselves or that we help others produce, moves into action. So the Sunlight Foundation was designed to use the power of the internet to catalyze greater government openness and transparency and to provide new resources for both media and citizens. We're committed to improving access to government information by making it available online, and that is absolutely key. By the way, I should mention that we are only 5 years old. We were founded almost exactly 5 years ago. I think our opening press conference was April 5 years ago. And our core has become this notion of providing, the notion of driving the notion that public information means that it is online and accessible. And we do this by focusing on the data, but also creating new tools and websites to access that information. Because if it's locked in a database, it's really not very accessible to anyone. And part of our mission, clearly, is to engage communities in its use and in the use of that information that we are liberating from usually the basements of government buildings. So here's the quick preview of Sunlight's work. Our work falls into these five major areas: digitization of data, building tools and websites to provide easy access to it, advocacy, citizen engagement, and media, what we call media production. So we've become our own media operation as well. By digitization, let's do that again. Data, that's where we want to be. By digitization of data, we mean building and developing databases out of either electronic or paper records, though we do very little of the latter on paper records, and opening them up for free, non-commercial use. Very important for us. Part of this we do through funding. We have a small funding pool out of Sunlight. We also do this by providing technical assistance to either grantees or non-grantees, key punching of data, and a lot of scraping of websites. We build tools. It's become a very important part of what we do. We either build them or we support tool building. And we do this because we want to make it easy for activists and for journalists to use and consume information. And we can talk about these later if you like. These are some of the glitzy work that Sunlight does. It's not absolutely key to this conversation. We do this because we free data, not because data needs to be free, but because we're interested in the activism and change that it can inform or actually cause. We want to catalyze a greater demand for government information, and so we have launched a national organizing campaign. We've already developed communities of technologists who are hacking away at government data, and Google groups of policy wonks and open government advocates. But now we think that the next challenge is to really engage millions of the online active citizens in the demand and the use of data. And we produce our own media. From breaking stories on our reporting group website to analyzing the kind and quality of data that's available from the government to covering important events on our platform called Sunlight Live. We are also advocates. We have two registered lobbyists. John is one of them. And we do this because we need new laws. Very early on, we were producing a lot of very interesting data and producing a lot of interesting tools, but I said to the government, this is not our responsibility, an NGO's responsibility. This is your responsibility. And so we developed a very robust policy program. And as you can see, we've been pushing many kinds of changes, both regulatory changes, rulemaking changes, and legislation to change the situation. So technology is absolutely critical to everything that we do. It allows us to build communities, to disperse information, to engage citizens, and provide information whenever and however people want it. Because we believe that armed with access to government information, vital public information, citizens can play a more productive and effective role in self-government and civic life. That's what gets us up every single morning. So the question is, how do you turn data into action? And that wasn't to imply that you have to turn the world upside down, but maybe you do. First of all, it's important to understand that transparency of government data is not about creating just a more informed electorate, but a healthier and more active one, one that's more rational, more dialogue-driven, smarter, and capable. Maybe that's a little naive from a political point of view, but I think that has to be part of our goal. A citizenry that can ask more informed questions and one that can ask demand changes based on the facts. It's also about creating change and taking action. So the bulk of what I want to talk about this morning are a number of examples of how data can fuel action. So this is the first one. Many of these come from NGOs that we either partner with, we work with, or have some association with. I'm going to run through these quickly. We can come back and talk about them in detail if you have questions. So the first one, OpenSecrets.org is an NGO in the U.S., as is Public Campaign. 20 years of data produced by OpenSecrets.org about how campaigns are financed in the U.S. come from the Center for Responsive Politics. They look at lobbying data, they look at campaign finance data. And they led to the creation of an organization called Public Campaign, which is an advocacy group that has pushed public financing of elections. Thousands of citizens, maybe tens of thousands of them, have been motivated to demand a systemic change in how the U.S. funds elections by data-driven examples of how the current campaign finance system is driven by special interest and warped by big money in politics. The U.S. movement for changing how we finance elections is entirely data-based, or based on data. Maybe this is the case because I'm the founder of both of these organizations in the past, and I understood after years of working on data of how elections are financed that the gem of the solution or approaching the solution to this problem really was in the data. So data, even since I left both these organizations, continues to inspire these campaign finance reform groups. Using data from the Open Secrets site last summer, reform groups staged a series of on-the-ground protests and demonstrations to help them advocate for public financing, targeting members of Congress who were taking money from the banking industry at the very same time that the U.S. Congress was trying to reform the banking laws. They are currently using data from the Open Secrets site to focus on a family of conservative, big political donors, the Koch brothers. And they are also using this data now with environmental groups, labor rights activists, and NGOs focusing on consumer banking information to help them make the case that big oil or big banks are limiting the reforms that need to be taken to protect average consumers. So here's another database. This is a Sunlight database. It's called Party Time. It's not quite as much fun as the title suggests. It's about political fundraisers. Those reformers, those campaign finance reformers, and many journalists and many others are using this website, which posts in real time invitations to political fundraisers for members of Congress, to highlight how the corporate interests that are hosting the events and the lobbyists that are hosting these events are getting way too friendly with their favorite congressman. This is part of the Sunlight is said to be the best of disinfectants change strategy. Here's a very different kind of example. This man, the one with the flag behind him, not our colleague Bill Allison on the left-hand side, is no longer Speaker of the U.S. House, which I think is the third highest position in the U.S. That his name was Dennis Hastert. He's no longer Speaker because Bill Allison, the reporter, discovered that by mashing two data sets together, that the Speaker, then Speaker, procured a special appropriation for a highway that ran very close to a piece of property that the Speaker himself owned. He made a couple of million dollars off of that. And it so sort of tarnished his image that he is, in part for that reason, only in part, no longer Speaker of the House. He is now retired. So this was mashing together two data sets, a financial disclosure data set and earmark request special appropriation data sets by an NGO that Sunlight helped to fund. So we helped put it together, but we also helped fund the databases that made this happen. Another example. One of our grantees, a group called the Institute on Money in State Politics that tracks campaign finance and lobbying at the state level, wrote a report last year called Private Prisons, Politics, and Profits that focused on the political power of the private prison industry's campaign contributions. Activists took that report, distributed it to 500 college campuses around the country. They held protest against a company that was an investor in private prisons and forced them to divest themselves of the stock. Direct action, all driven by data. This is a site that's a signature site for the Sunlight Foundation and our partners, the Participatory Politics Foundation. It's called Open Congress, and it has served as a resource to inform the demands of change for change in many, many different areas. This is a site that takes legislation and combines it with many other features, including a blog post, a political commentary, a mainstream news service, many, many other features. And the site is more of a resource site that activists are using to inform and educate their activists. And soon we will be launching on top of this site actual organizing tools for activists to come to this site to inform, educate, and then organize from it. This is one of our most popular sites, and we understand the need to build into it tools that people will use because we have built it. We have a 500,000 to 1 million visitors a month on this fairly wonky site, and people seem to want to do something there, so we're going to build the tools on top of it. American NGOs, as diverse as Public Knowledge, which is a digital rights organization, the Innocence Project, a national litigation and public policy organization dedicated to exonerating wrongfully convicted people, the Center for Strategic and International Studies, a conservative public policy research tank, the Midwife Connection, a midwife advocacy organization, Justia, a free legal resource organization, the ACLU, a major U.S. organization advocating individual rights, all refer activists to relevant legislation on Open Congress and often use widgets to follow specific legislation that they are interested in. An NGO called Universal Preschool, a homeschooling advocacy group, uses the widgets for sure to share information about relevant legislative proposals. A few more examples. Yeah, I did that again, didn't I? It's the wrong button. All right. This is a site run by a longtime colleague of ours, Carl Malamud, who has been a pioneer in freeing government information, and now he's focusing in the legal arena. Recently, when he got case and docket information from federal appellate, district, and bankruptcy courts, he was able to document extensive privacy violations. In turn, this led to new privacy rules being enacted by the Judicial Conference. Groups have used this database, and it's a terrible database. Department of Labor's, no, this one is all right. This is the Department of Labor Combined Enforcement Database to learn about violations at a mine where there was a horrific accident in the U.S. that killed 29 people last year. They are using the data here to demand new legislation to remedy the problems. So this was an awful database, but it actually had useful information in it. And journalists and activists have used this, what's called the Gulf of Mexico Region Database, at a government agency called the Minerals Management Services, to discover how poorly the oil company BP, which was responsible for that horrific oil spill in the Gulf of Mexico last year, how poorly they were regulated and how the agency itself had become complacent to the corporate inadequacies themselves. They were enablers. What was revealed resulted in the Obama administration reversing itself and promising not to pursue offshore oil drilling in the eastern Gulf of Mexico or anywhere along the U.S. East Coast. Now, I should say that that's a slightly fluctuating decision, but at the moment, we do not believe that they have changed from that. So now I want to give you a couple of examples of data-driven journalism. Where change has resulted as a result of using government data. First of all, 5 years ago, the use of data as a basis for reporting was very difficult and costly, requiring tech skills far beyond what most reporters had available, and certainly more than political bloggers did. The reality of that is partly what propelled the Sunlight Foundation into existence. Today, there's a notable change. Now there are stacks of tools to dig into big data, open source tools that allow navigation and analysis of large amounts of data so that you can digest them very quickly. There are online applications that allow us to share and visualize data. And as I mentioned early on, Sunlight actually builds a number of these tools. Data-driven journalism is breathing new life into the media, and it's into the media and in to the lives of activists as well. Journalists are finding new roles as sense makers, digging deep into the data because it's easier and it makes the reporting more relevant. Some really good examples come from two nonprofits that Sunlight has a relationship with. I don't know why that happened, but there we are. The first one is a nonprofit reporting site, investigative site called ProPublica. And ProPublica, what's so interesting, I think, particularly about ProPublica is not only do they do in-depth investigative reporting, but they also develop tools that will last well beyond their actual reports and analysis. So you can find a database here that contains a list of homes with tainted drywall in it, in an interactive database that lists more than 6,000 addresses with this kind of defect. This is really taking the ability to for the average citizen to really understand the importance of this issue because it is so personalized. You can find a dialysis tracking facility that allows patients to compare clinics on such measures as patient survival, infection control, hospital rates, and transplants. You can find your doctor's name in an interactive database of what companies have paid doctors to promote their drugs. So this is a very interesting sort of sidebar, but I think it's very core, I hate to call it a sidebar, to the reporting that ProPublica does. It leaves behind open databases that anyone then can use to inform themselves about issues. The Center for Public Integrity, a longstanding nonprofit investigative journalism site, does many stories that are data-driven. One story done through the Consortium of Investigative Journalists found that asbestos will take maybe 10 million lives worldwide by 2030. A global network of lobbying groups has spent only over $100 million in public and private money to promote to keep asbestos in international commerce. As a result of this study, one example is that a Canadian member of parliament has called for the end to his country's export of this mineral. So it has served as a way to spur activism. Another story, digging deep into government data, found that in the name of job creation and energy, the Obama administration has doled out billions of dollars in stimulus money to some of the U.S.'s most egregious polluters while giving them exemptions from environmental rules. As soon as this study came out, needless to say, there was a huge outcry from the environmental community, and it has raised this issue and brought a new sensitivity to this rather odd kind of exemption most people fought. So clearly one of the key challenges for all of us is to figure out how to make our data more actionable. Because some of us just produce data, some of us do advocacy, but not every institution can have the sort of range of activities that we would like, nor would we expect everyone to be able to do it. So one of the clear changes is, how do you take from the data you produce? How do we design the data to help communities pursue their interest? And this has been part of our focus from the very beginning. In 1997, we facilitated a discussion in California that ultimately established 8, and we can continue to iterate on that, I think of them as 9, open data principles, principles that have been endorsed by 30 prominent open government advocates in the U.S. We believe these principles are key to answering the question that is implicit in the meeting that we're having this week, and that's, how should governments give us data so to enable communities, whether they are research, whether they're academics, whether they're activists, so we can pursue our interest. And by clear implication, how should we as NGOs that in turn take this data, what are the factors that we should consider as we develop it and make it available to activists who would use the kind of research and analysis that we do? So I'm going to run through these quickly because I know we're going to focus on these later in the day, and I did that again. Different from my computer, but here they are, the open data principles. So I list 9 of them here, and they're pretty self-explanatory. Data should be complete, and it must be made available online. All public data should be determined by valid privacy, security, and privilege limitations. We are not advocates of opening up everything. There are reasons to keep some data private. Data should be collected at its source with the highest possible granularity. It should not be made available in just aggregate or modified forms. Data has to be timely and made available as quickly as possible to preserve the value of it. So if we're looking at data that's 6 months old, it's useful academically, but it is not terribly useful for most activists. And that's a huge problem in the U.S., and I would imagine in your countries as well. Data has to be made accessible to the widest number of users, and for Sunlight, that means it has to be made available online and in real time. The data has to be machine-readable. When the new administration came in to Washington, we would have a series of meetings, ongoing meetings, like what do you need, what kind of data, we want to be the most transparent administration in history. And we just looked at them, and after the third meeting, they said, yes, we know, Sunlight wants machine-readable data. We said that was the baseline for us. The data has to be non-discriminatory, meaning that data is available to anyone without any requirement of registration. I think the reason for that is fairly obvious. It has to be non-proprietary. Data has to be available in a format over which no entity has exclusive control. And it has to be license-free, not subject to any copyright, patent, trademark, or trade secret regulation. We require all of our grantees, and it's just a very small number of them, to make all of their data available via an API, for example. Reasonable privacy, as I said, and security restrictions should be allowed. And it has to be permanently accessible. This is sort of in the age of the Internet. How do you assure that anything is there 6 months later? So these are that we have to begin to figure that out. But so these are the these are what we have developed as our open data principles. And I'd like to close now with just a few contextual thoughts about the world of technology, transparency of data, citizen engagement, and government. Why do we want data to be open and easily accessible? We want this because we deeply believe that armed with more access to all kinds of vital public information, citizens can play a much more productive and effective role in self-government and civic life. We believe that the data will inform the demands of accountability for government and its officials. All right, we've skipped that slide that's not moving. Technology is a key for citizens as a tool for government accountability. That's why the technology is part of our core mission. Third, the Internet is the public space of the modern world, and through it, the government now has the opportunity to better understand the needs of their citizens, and citizens have the opportunity to create change. Fourth, our role as citizens is only as strong as our government data is open. We believe that the open data promotes increased civil discourse, improved public welfare, and a more efficient use of public resources along with citizen activism. The key actions that make up our lives as citizens, informed voting, active participation, and taking action, all depend on access to public information. And we believe that transparency of government information is the basis for accountable government. In the age of Facebook, Twitter, smartphones, and Foursquare, we have rising expectations of greatly expanded access to government information and easy access to our government officials to ask them questions. Thank you very much, and I'd be glad to take any questions that you have. By the way, we have established a Twitter hashtag, and it is OSF Buddha. If anyone is following on Twitter, OSF Buddha.
Data is not very good. They still have the capacity to collect very good data.
Well, let me sort of back around the question, and if I don't answer it, come back at me. One of the things that Sunlight did very early on was to try to decide which way we wanted to approach the problem of asking government for data. Did we want to look at it and just present ourselves as an accountability organization? We want the data to hold you accountable. And that seemed kind of negative. And so we have sort of approached the government as saying, this is a way to engage citizens, to get citizens to trust government. And so we have sort of put a positive frame on the demand to liberate data. And so I think obtaining data, you know, and illustrating the positive benefits of this for citizen engagement is a very possible first step, because we know in many countries the data is not at all publicly available. It is a radical transformation. But, you know, in fact, even in the U.S., this is a very difficult transition for government to make. We like to often say that information is power. I believe that to be the case. And so releasing information into the public means giving power to citizens who are digesting it. We know that. That's why we're looking for it. So I think, you know, each country has to start with whatever the opportunities are that present themselves, and not make this an initial battle for information. Is that helpful?
More questions?
I would say, just in your preface of your statement, there is tremendous resistance in the U.S. by government and its officials to opening up data. I think the public is sort of right there with us, which is that data ought to be made available. And I think the public polls also show that certain things should not be made available. We have not thought in great detail, to answer your question, about what that line is. And so we have said genuine national security concerns should be justified as being withheld. Is that cables, between the State Department, you know, the people abroad and the U.S. State Department? Kind of hard to say, actually. I mean, the one cable that I looked at was classified, actually, because it had a sticky on it that said, don't let this information, this would be embarrassing if revealed. That was what classified that particular document. So in my judgment, that did not make that a document that should have been withheld. So I think we all, as a community, have to define that. One example, in a database that we helped to create on government grants, which includes grants to individuals who might have received money from the government, that data included Social Security numbers because the agency that was releasing it had a number, maybe it was ABFYX, and then it had their entire Social Security number. Now, that strikes me as, you know, private information. The agency should not have incorporated Social Security numbers, or it should have been excised and you just had the first, you know, 9 numbers as opposed to all 24 numbers. But I think we have to get better at focusing on that, and we have not looked at it in detail. So it's a good point. Hope we can talk about that later. Sure.
question might go in front of the other. See, the legislation process in Bulgaria right now goes in the direction of closing the trade register. So any like normal person, so to say, will not be able to track, you know, the companies owned by the politicians in Bulgaria if the elections are passed in power. So what's the experience, like the proper experience in that field of war? For example, a Bulgarian candidate for European Commissioner Zeleva, she was accused because of her private companies. So what's her balance, what's the proper direction in this?
Well, on that, the U.S., this is classic. So any elected member of Congress and any high official in the executive branch must fill out what's called a personal disclosure form. And that is made publicly available. And until fairly recently, of course, you had to get it between the hours of 11 and 2 in the basement of the Capitol. Okay, it's now made available in a PDF form online. However, the form is so generic that you really can't tell very much. So if you own a piece of property or you have investments in a particular company, you have to say whether this is an investment in the range of $0 to $100,000 or $100,000 to $500,000. So you have some sense of what the level of investment is. Furthermore, these forms are required to be reported once a year, and they are filled out either by hand or perhaps they're typed, but they are now made available in a PDF form. So you can't, you know, in order to create a database out of it is somewhat of a big deal to do this. We have actually funded the Center for Responsive Politics, the NGO I mentioned earlier, to create a database out of this, as inadequate as the information actually is. But it does give us some public record, because there is a requirement that certain officials, both elected and appointed, have to provide this kind of information. So there is a law that requires that. And, you know, our job is to work to make it more complete and to make it more timely. So that is actually how we discovered that the former Speaker of the House had sold a piece of property that benefited him personally. We said, wow, that's interesting. He made $2 million on this piece of property. I wonder if, you know, he ever put an earmark in for the, you know, this new road that went by. And we were tipped off by a local citizen that they thought that this had happened. And so we discover things. I mean, if these documents are studied carefully, like how many members of Congress came in and increased the value of their assets and holding after being in Congress 5 or 10 years? Very interesting data. We did an analysis of that, and it suggested that, in fact, many people, one way or another, became a lot wealthier. Of course.
What is your take on the Wikileaks scandal, and what do you think is going to be the long-term impact on how diplomacy is conducted?
Well, we're more concerned. I mean, first of all, I think the WikiLeaks phenomenon is part of what is happening. It's an example of what is happening on the internet that we're very excited about, which is that it is enabling many of us in this room to become influential bloggers. It is enabling most of us in this room to become publishers of information at very low cost. It is enabling all of us to become entrepreneurs and contribute something. So I think what WikiLeaks has done is in that continuum of what we're all doing, perhaps a bit more extreme. It raises the question of overclassification of documents, as I referred to earlier. But we are concerned if there are genuine national security implications for this, and we do believe that some negotiations of all types, whether it's healthcare deliberations on a piece of legislation, can happen in the back room. But we also believe that citizens should have the right to review legislation before it's actually considered, and should have a role and input and opportunity into other kinds of deliberations that have always taken behind closed doors. So it's a very tricky issue for us. The most serious concern for us is government overreaction to it. And immediately, I mean, whether it was a senator's office calling PayPal and PayPal shutting down the ability for anybody to give money to WikiLeaks or Amazon shutting down their servers, that really raised very, very serious concerns. A number of pieces of legislation have been introduced that, if they moved forward, would be extremely worrisome and would cause what seems to be a general cultural understanding of the need for more openness to push back on that. In fact, we've seen very little action in this regard, so perhaps it was just a flurry of a very conservative approach to it. So it makes us very, we're watching what the phenomenon is, but the biggest concern for Sunlight is really what the government reaction is and a fear of overreaction. We're just really moving into the citizen engagement piece of our work. You know, it's about a year or so old. And so we actually had, we build a lot of tools, as I mentioned earlier, and a lot of them are really cool, and the staff really like them, and some of them get well used by the public in general, and some of them don't, but we still really like them. So, but, you know, why are we building them if no one uses them? And we've realized that part of this is we need to do a lot of outreach ourselves in terms of the data we provide, as well to media, journalists, as well as activist groups. So in the last several years, supported actually by OSF, the U.S. programs, we have done trainings of journalists on the kinds of databases and tools that we develop. And it's been a huge success. So we'll train 1,300, 1,500 journalists a year on the use of these tools. What we are discovering, in short, is that if you build it, they may not come. And so you have to do the outreach. We're now actually going to fill, we had a position last year that was marketing just to media to use some of our tools, and we had, we counted them, of course, 163 media outlets use widgets that we had built of political information on their websites. This year, we're going to expand that position to including outreach to activist groups and to, you know, online groups that are using online activities. So outreach to environmental groups, outreach to human rights groups. Why would you use this tool? Why is this information useful? And use it as a kind of two-way street. So we will be reaching out, but we will also be listening to the groups to understand what they could use and what kind of tools would help advance their work and engage average citizens. Organizations like the Sierra Club in the U.S. have millions of people who are actively engaged online, but they may not understand that we have a lot of tools that would give people the opportunity to engage with data and with information to help watchdog their member of Congress on environmental issues. And so we think that's really our responsibility to do the outreach. It's our biggest challenge, frankly, which is to get the our target is what we describe as the active online citizen. That's someone who comes online for information. And there are tens of millions of these people in the U.S. To better use these tools. Thanks. Good question. Okay.
This is a sort of follow-up question on the previous one, but from the other end. Do you track systematically the impact of the different pieces of data that you publish? Because you gave us some very interesting examples, but do you have any tools for systematic monitoring on actually whether the data reach out to the citizens and what do they do with it?
We have not until this year begun actually systematically tracked the impact side of things. So most of what we have is anecdotal, and it's no way to do it. So my suggestion is start tracking now, because I think we'll find more examples the more we look for them. It's also somewhat difficult. I think everyone will find it difficult to say, because we did this, that law was passed. Even though we know, We reviewed that piece of legislation. We inserted that piece of language into a particular bill. But the member of Congress that we were working with would really not like us to take a lot of credit for it. So I think there are some internal documents, and sometimes we do that in reports to funders to say, we can't claim completely X, but here's the role we played in that process. And so we are much more interested now, as are many of our funders, in literally doing an impact analysis. We are adding some of these kinds of analytic tools to our various websites this year. But the stories that we want to be able to tell are something we'll be collecting by hand. It's not easy. It's not easy. And what is activism? You know, is informing, you know, an NGO who is informing its activists, you know, impact? Yeah, I would say that's yes. You know, is there a news story that was informed by a report or data analysis that led to the, you know, the firing of a, you know, or a departure of a member of Congress or of an administration? I would say yes, that's impact. So you have to define what your goals are as an organization, and then what the real world impact is.
Journalists or, you know, simple citizens like just using this information, and can you wait between those two? Because sometimes you need, in our experience, media or public opinion leaders to take that very interesting data that we're thinking and put it high up on the public agenda. Because I mean, if it's only a simple citizen or 100 simple citizens knowing this, that doesn't reach Capitol Hill. Not for sure. I mean, and not with the same impact like if you see it on 7 p.m. o'clock news. So how can you wait between those two? And the second question is, what's your dearest example on impact of any of your initiatives that you have, like a person or not a designation, maybe, or a dearest example?
So the answer to your question is yes and. Sunlight was actually founded to make sure that journalists had the tools to tell data-driven stories that would have impact. So journalists always remain a core constituency, are a core constituency for us. And rather than the average citizen, we are really looking at we describe them as the active online citizen. So it is people who have been identified as they come online for information, but they also do something more than just receive information. They send, they forward, you know, an appeal. They, you know, link to something else. They send an email. They leave a comment. So on our Open Congress site, which I think is certainly by far the most attractive in terms of the participation. As soon as we opened comments on bills, so here's the piece of legislation. What are you as a, you know, as the online active citizen? You're there, right? You're online. Think about this. We had 100,000 comments on unemployment insurance legislation. And it wasn't all completely relevant, but it was people who were looking for help or information, or they were unemployed citizens. I would bet that 90% of them were unemployed citizens and wanted to contribute what they thought from whatever their perspective was. And it was a way to, it gave them a way to have a voice to get engaged in legislation. And we know that this site is widely used on the Hill by members of Congress and their staff. And so it became a kind of bridge for the lawmakers to understand what the public was feeling, or at least this online active public. And we haven't seen a reason to say, oh, it's only going to be journalists, because the brilliance, we have a nice picture. Just, yeah, all right, just in case something embarrassing would show up on John's computer. we haven't seen a reason to sort of say, oh, we're only going to serve journalists, Because the brilliance of the technology is it is now in the hands of, you know, the online active citizen. It provides such an opportunity to go past the gatekeepers. And at least in the U.S., the media is so challenged at this point. And so if we selected them, you know, and used them as gatekeepers, I think we would lose a lot of people. So we have really kept as a second tier this online active citizen. And we would include in that the mediating NGOs as well. But we haven't done that much outreach to them, which is why we're going to move forward. What's my favorite example of impact? I mean, I have to say it probably comes out of John's policy shop, because in the end, we want to change government policy about making data that's available. So the opportunity to work behind the scenes to provide information for legislation that actually changes, you know, what is required. One of our very early projects was called the Open House Project. John was in charge of that actually before he worked full-time for Sunlight. And what we did was we created an online distributed community to talk about easy ways for the U.S. House of Representatives to use technology to come into the 21st century. Collaboratively, there was a group of about 500 at its height, 550, something like that, people who had a single conversation with that purpose. It was filled with experts. These were not even active online citizens for the most part. These were experts, but they were people all over the U.S. Who had some experience. Collectively, they developed a report, which was written by individuals on this list. Someone said, I'll take that chapter, and someone else said, I'll take that chapter. In that report, which ended up with how many recommendations? 10 recommendations, and quite a number have been implemented. And when we presented that report, the Democrats were in the majority in the House. Nancy Pelosi, the then Speaker of the House, endorsed it, as did the minority leader. His name is John Boehner. He is now, of course, Speaker of the House, conservative Speaker of the House. And many of those recommendations, which he then happily endorsed as a member of the minority, he is now in the position to implement. And so it has given us an opportunity to be in his office frequently, and to his credit, he has continued to endorse a number of those recommendations. I think that was very significant in terms of raising the level of awareness of the need for congressional transparency. And if there's any part of the U.S. government that is reluctant to be transparent, it is the U.S. Congress.
Thank you. I guess it's just me. As a young organization, I think following in the footsteps of Sunlight Foundation and when it comes to relevancy, we often work and build bridges with local NGOs, journalists, but also try to build bridges with the government in order to change policy and to move towards a more sort of machine oriented data sharing. But we try to maintain sort of policy of neutrality when it comes to citizen data or citizen data. However, at the same time, in order to engage people that are most likely going to use that data, such as NGOs and things within Georgia, we often debate how far we should go to challenge the government, challenge. What we like and dislike about data. We always try to stay fixed on data and not make a cut, move outside that realm, because today we find that the government is very standoffish in terms of giving data and information to journalists and to those sometimes we've seen in the past, hyperbole and perhaps unjust, aggressive sort of anger from journalists. I think we need your advice on maneuvering this type of what have been your obstacles within your most difficult areas? How do you sort of come over certain things?
Let's get it to Albert was next, Masha, and Gia, and then I close the tweet.
Yes.
general, not
thank you.
Complex and scope, like wide scope. But I want to be a devil's advocate at this point and say, were you in the position that you regretted for releasing or leaving certain information, jeopardizing certain process of or life of the citizen or something like that? So next time you are going to do a certain thing more cautiously.
Can you pass the microphone behind to Gia?
Thank you. So my question is slightly different. So there are so many organizations which are trying to monitor the government in what money they spend, but there are a few attempts to understand what are the results of the spending and what is the impact, what are the outcomes. So we are most interested in that direction. And do you have any kind of tools or approaches of how to organize this kind of monitoring of outcomes? Thank you.
Can you pass the microphone to Masha and we go the round of questions?
Okay, I want to ask the question about the less benevolent users of the tools that you are building. Do you have experience with activists who were, we always think that activists are benevolent in a way, and they are working for the best of the society and the public good. What is your experience, if you know about any case, let's say about people at the activists, using the data in ways that are, against the public interest? Because this is a very difficult question. I mean, we in OSF are kind of starting to think about, let's say, the race of racism in this part of the world, and you see that they are very well organized groups who can, let's say, in this case, if you talk about user data, they can use the data in ways that are probably part of what we want them to, do and what is good for citizens.
Yeah.
Can you reply?
Yeah. Let me marry the first question and this last question, which is how do we do our work in a nonpartisan kind of way? It's actually been shockingly easy to do it in a nonpartisan way. From the very beginning, Sunlight has been worked very closely with conservative think tanks, conservative editorial writers, and we've made our data available to anyone, whatever their purpose is. And from the very beginning, people have sort of had trouble categorizing what is the Sunlight Foundation. Are you a conservative organization? Are you a liberal organization? What do you mean you're nonpartisan? That's generally, sort of a cover for something that you're not. But we've been very successful at that because conservatives are very interested in transparency, particularly of government spending. They want to know it for different reasons because they have different priorities than liberals would want. But liberals are also interested in transparency of information because they want to say, look how much money we spend on defense and we don't spend enough on schools and education. So we've actually been able to skirt that quite well by staying out of issues per se. So we don't do things on environmental issues because you're going to come down one way or another. On the issue of climate change. Now, that's not to say we wouldn't work with a climate change organization kind of, off the record, advising them on how to use our tools. But the Cato Institute, which is a libertarian, major libertarian institute, would run journalist trainings for more conservative journalists, and we would be right there teaching them how to use the tools. So we're concerned. We have that slight concern about what if people whose politics we really disagree with, but we also have this firm belief, as I said earlier, that the data can create informed action. I would suggest that some of the Tea Party stances are uninformed action, and so we do have this deep belief that the data will create more informed action. The one issue where we run into trouble on in terms of this sort of nonpartisan issue is in the area of this campaign finance reform. So we actually do not take a position on reform per se, what the system should look like. We only talk about what disclosure should look like of campaign finance information. That still runs us into some trouble, I must say, even though conservatives used to think that disclosure of campaign finance information was the reform that was necessary. But generally, we have been amazingly successful in this. And as I said, you know, we're very friendly with the conservatives in power in the House at the moment, less friendly with the conservatives in the Senate. And in fact, we were asked to testify last week by the Republicans, not the Democrats, on a hearing about government spending precisely. The results of moving to government spending, do we have tools? John and I are going to do a workshop tomorrow just on the issue of government spending and the kinds of things that we've created. So let me defer that question until tomorrow and that workshop. And have we ever regretted the release of information? Not yet. I'm looking at John for confirmation. So not yet. That day will come. I mean, there will be something, I'm sure, that will prove to be embarrassing or damaging in some fashion. But because the core information that we are interested in is money, stuff, data related to money, power, influence, and data that citizens can use, corporate, what we call corporate accountability data, or government being accountable to the public, government accountability data, it seems that we may skirt some things like in the national security arena that could be potentially damaging or that we might regret. So the answer is not yet, but we are only 5 years old. Mistakes will happen. Yeah, thank you. Sounds like you have a story to tell.
And the region, but also more about
thank you very much.